You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
First thing in the morning, as soon as you wake up, the to-do list starts.
Does the car need gas? Hopefully those leftovers are still good.
Why did I get CC'd on
Mom?
No.
You can't escape the to-do list, but you can make the most of your me time with a relaxing shower using Method hair care products. Try Pure Peace Volumizing, Simply Nourish Moisturizing, or Daily Zen Shampoo and Conditioner for daily use. All formulated with long-lasting fragrances and are safe for color-treated hair. Reconnect with the best version of yourself. Visit methodproducts.com to unleash your inner shower.
Hello, this is Good One, a podcast about jokes. I'm your host, Vulture Senior Editor, Jesse David Fox. Each episode, I have a comedian come on to play a clip of one of their bits and then discuss how they wrote it and how it fits into what they're trying to do with their comedy. Comedians sometimes have silly ideas. It's a great thing about them. However, usually, those with the resources to see things out to their fullest potential tend not to have time, and those who have the time don't usually have the resources. Don't get me wrong, I love a scrappy little thing, but ever so often a comedian comes out with a big wild swing and it reminds me what I love about covering comedy. For example, of a past Good One episode, I'm thinking of the Lonely Island's visual concept album about the Bash Brothers. This week we have something truly unbelievable that only becomes more unbelievable when you realize how much work went into it. A little over a year ago, Chelsea Peretti, who also made one of my absolute favorite stand-up specials, well, ever, Netflix is One of the Greats, left her role as Gina Linetti on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. When she left, the hope was to get back more time to spend following her own muse. And her muse turned out to be coffee. Like, the drink. She loves the stuff and how it makes her feel. So much so, that with more time on her hands, she decided to record an entire album about it. She called her friend, music producer Kool Kojak, who has produced songs for Nicki Minaj, Kesha, and Flo Rida, and who produced the frantic songs Chelsea would play on her podcast called Chelsea Peretti. And together, they recorded dozens, if not hundreds of songs just about coffee that are actually not just about coffee, but actually are definitely just about coffee. The songs are very funny, except for when they're not. And in those cases, the comedy comes from the fact that a person put this much work into a serious song about coffee. The music walks a line that's hard to categorize as one sort of thing, as silly as it sounds, and it's very silly. It's one of the most successfully paradoxical works of comedy in recent memory. If it's not clear, I freaking love this project. While she puts the finishing touches on the whole album, today, the day when this interview comes out, Chelsea is dropping an EP entitled Foam and Flotsam, as well as two music videos. This will be the first of two EPs, with a full album scheduled to come out in June. Though we play clips from all the songs on the EP, before the interview we're going to play all the first track, Late, a song about coffee, and so much more. We spoke to Chelsea last week over Zoom, just like you. Well, not Chelsea, just the Zoom part, probably. Right? That makes sense? Anyway, here is Chelsea Peretti's Late.
Sit and wait.
red hair and coffee and a scone. Seems like you could have skipped one or two, and I wouldn't have been alone waiting for you all alone at our set time that we set. I was here at one on the dot. You were not. You lied and said that it was hard to find a parking spot.
I am here with Chelsea Peretti. Thank you for joining us.
It's my absolute honor. Thank you for having me.
So let's start here. How are you doing? How has quarantining been for you? And I know on Instagram I've seen you cooking and doing makeup tutorials. You've became the celebrity face of the Dalgona coffee movement.
Oh my gosh. Wait, isn't it Dalgona?
Oh, I have no idea. I've literally just said it out loud for the first time. I've seen it a bunch.
Yeah, it's going, you know, I don't know. It's like, it goes in waves, and I feel like everyone kind of hit a breaking point at like 3 weeks, everyone that I know, where you're just like, this can't keep going, can it? I know that I'm lucky, and I recite that a lot, you know, to make myself, and I actually do feel pretty in positive spirits, aside from like, if I read anything, it goes to a dark place quickly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. Cooking is good because it just takes your mind off everything.
So before we talk about the album, I want to just back up and talk a little bit about coffee generally. What is the story of your love affair with coffee?
You know, I think that it might be because Italians, like my dad's side of the family, which is a hodgepodge that leans Italian, I think they would give me coffee with milk in it when I was mm-hmm. little-ish. I don't know. But anyway, regardless, what's not to like? It's a real pick-me-up. I mean, it smells great to me. And then it just makes me so, like, energized. I'm explaining coffee.
I know. Well, it makes sense considering what were the album we'll talk about for this entire interview. That so when did you like? I mean, it's this is a funny question to ask, but like, coffee then became a bit of a muse for you comedically.
Yes, because when I drink a lot of coffee, I do wind up getting really, really energetic. And then I tend to like sing or act, you know, act a fool, as the case may be. And so, you know, it's a muse. It's definitely,
a muse. So getting into making music, as you told it, Cool Cold Jack, who is a legit music producer, had been making this sort of short songs you were doing on your podcast called Chelsea Peretti, like Coffee Cranking Through My Sis.
Hold for applause. When you call Kojak a legit music producer, it really makes him sound even shadier and like more of a like to have to call him legit in his intro.
You said you've talked about doing an album with him before. You mentioned that there was an email in 2012 about it. So how did you decide to actually start working on it? And how did it evolve from whatever the first kernel you had to sort of the big picture of what this album became?
You know, it's funny because anything I've like created, people always ask the genesis story, and I feel like I just have like a weird blind spot. Like I can't exactly remember how it unfolded. You know, when I used to go on the road doing stand up more, I would drink coffee and then I would send him these audio recordings of me just singing, you know, a cappella, of course, just random songs. And then he would turn them into actual songs with instrumentation, and I would put them on my podcast, and that's how the Coffee Cranking song came about. Because Kojak has worked with like pop people, and he's good at making like an actual pop sound if he wants to. And so he took my manic, you know, drivel and turned it into this catchy thing. I mean, listen, I don't want to undersell myself. I'm an incredible songwriter.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's kind of how we started. And then, yeah, we had thought and talked about doing an album, never really did it. And then we both were at a place in our careers where we just wanted to do something fully for the creative spirit of it all. And I mean, we were just going to slap something together really quick and be like, and do it in like a month and put out an album. And then it turned into this odyssey, this kind of, I don't know what, has it been a year? I don't know. It's eaten up all my time. And then we made like a real album and all these different people worked on it, musicians, and it just turned into this thing. I just kind of followed it down every wormhole. Mm-hmm.
You have said that like when you started it, you're like, oh, we're just making these silly songs. And then somewhere you're like, oh, we're making good songs, or like we're making songs. Can you talk about that difference and that breakthrough?
Yeah, I mean, well, it started like, we're just going to make a coffee album. And so, of course, your first thought is just really hyper songs, really aggressive, really repetitive. And that's what we were making. And then as I was reviewing them, I'm like, I hate listening to this. And so I'm like, is there any way we can make this album less annoying? And then I feel like I got into like really trying to make good music. And then like, there was a phase of that for a couple of months. And then it was like, wait a minute. These songs aren't funny anymore. What am I just trying to make real music now? And so then we bounced into like a much more comedic phase where we got into like, I felt like through all this whole waves of journey, we got into songs that sound good and are funny.
Yeah. So I wanted to focus a little bit on Late for a few questions. It's the opening track on the EP. What was the initial spark of an idea that made you want to write a song in that area?
Well, I mean, first of all, this song, I was going to say that it came at the end when we found the comedy again, but actually that's not true. This concept was something we explored early on, but it was a totally different genre in its first incarnation. It was a really high energy, kind of just completely different song.
How you gonna show up late but have a coffee in your hand? I'm fine with you being late, but I'm not fine with that coffee in your hand. How did you have time to stop and get a coffee cup?
Mm-hmm. And again, I felt it was kind of annoying. And so later I was like, let's make this emo. Let's take this same concept and make it really emo. And, you know, I was thinking of like Elliot Smith and like, you know, just really vulnerable and just kind of letting your vocals just be more raw, but like mm-hmm. still have this like vulnerable, you know. But that song wound up being, I think, of any of the songs on the album, the most like stand up.
So in general, the first steps was you'd have an idea and then you would talk to, would you then talk to Kojak out about what you wanted the music to be? Like it was.
Oh yeah. Musically. So I, a lot of times would improvise a song and then we would take from it, the parts that worked and expand on that. And so I do frequently improvise things that kind of work and become kind of earworms. Mm-hmm. And so I improvise this in a totally different version and genre. And so then I kind of took the pieces I liked and then expanded on it. And Kojak will sometimes play piano with me as if we're like in musical theater or something. And he'll accompany me and we'll both be kind of vibing where I'm singing some emo soft song and he's playing the piano that goes with it. And then we'll, you know, switch it up from there.
So you'll just like riff on the idea of that and then
the concept.
And then you re-record it once you pick from those lines, or you just would pick some of those sections?
We'll use some of the ones from the original sometimes, but then we'll re-sing them or we'll rearrange them. And I mean, sometimes it's not always the same process. Like sometimes we'll be sitting outside of his studio and he'll play guitar and we'll be making up stuff together, or I'll make up lyrics and I'll record them on my phone and then we'll go back in and record them. But yeah, it's usually just like I've found a lot of good stuff from improvising and then writing it off of that.
You mentioned this is the song that's most like stand-up.
Yeah, it is the most like stand-up because it has like a lot of like what I would call like reversals in it. Like you think, okay, I know the joke, and then it changes and then it changes again. And it also feels kind of like, I hate to use the word rant, but it feels like exploring every angle of why something is irritating.
Yeah.
And that's what I would do in stand-up. And it has twists and turns that are, you know, the surprises that make people laugh when you're doing stand-up.
The thing that I think a lot of the songs, at least most of the ones that are more, let's say, word heavy, you would like establish the premise right away and then sort of iterate on that. How did you realize like that's the sort of general format of like this song or Soundproof has the same sort of thing where like this is what it is, now I'm going to just like talk about this thing in different ways over and over?
Yeah, I think that that's what's been so fun about this for me, is realizing the ways. And I think there is this symbiosis between musicians and comedians, like we always want to be each other and stuff, and just realizing that in songwriting, like there are similarities. Like you want people to know what the premise is, you want them to know what the mood is so that they can get invested and get on board for the joke or the song, you know. But yeah, but every song was different, and so they were all kind of written and created differently, but it has been this creatively just such a fun process to see what translates from stand up and comedy writing into music.
I heard you talk a little bit about this on the Talkhouse podcast with the Imperial Team's Will Schwartz, who's also featured on the album, about thinking about the lyrics being funny or the singing being funny and how that contrasts to the idea of being funny, where instead of having every line being funny, you need to sort of commit. Can you talk about that line between like, oh, this needs to sound like a comedy song, or like we need this to sound like a real song? How did you walk that line? How did you think about that?
I mean, some of the songs like really aren't funny. Like, and that's the thing that then becomes funny to me is that I'm writing like a serious sad song. There's one song that literally made me and Kojak, my producer, cry. Mm-hmm. Then we brought in his friend and now my friend Jerry. And then Jerry was like kind of making jokes about it and stuff. By the end of us like explaining it to him and playing it for him, he cried. So now there's a song on this dumb comedy concept album about coffee that has made three grown people cry.
Which song is that?
Grandma.
Got it.
Yeah. But then, you know, that song also has been through so many journeys. I mean, me and Kojak both love our grandmas so much, and we went on this insane journey through like 50 iterations of a song about a grandma.
You made this house a home. Now I sit here alone.
We feel like we know this woman now that we're singing about, who's kind of a fictionalized all-purpose grandma. Yeah, so, you know, to me, sometimes it's okay to not have it be jokety, jokety, joke. And if every song was jokety, jokety, joke, I wouldn't want to listen to the album. Now, some people, they would, and that's what they're going to be looking for, and they'll be confused. But other people will appreciate the variety and having a respite from kind of jokiness at all times. And then it becomes kind of a deeper joke, which is, why did you make this song? Which for me is also very funny. And why is this song on a comedy album about coffee?
So the song there's two turns, as you mentioned. The first one is that the song is really about you. I think all the songs I've heard has an interesting relationship with being genuine and being sort of ironic. How real is this moment? And what does it even mean to you, sort of this section?
Well, I think that I'm always interested in the idea of hating yourself. And, you know, this song certainly is an examination of that. You know, I fucking hate when people do this, but I myself do this. And I think that that's something I'm always fascinated by. I mean, there's a whole term, self-hating Jew. And, you know, why is that? And why is it that some people are born with less self-doubt than others? And why do some people feel confident when they wake up in the morning? You know, my stand-up special, I had a joke about how it must be to wake up if you're a guy and you're like, you know, wake up just like, everyone wants to hear how I'm feeling. I actually can't remember my own joke now, but regardless, I've been sort of obsessed with the idea of confidence and believing in yourself, thinking you're hot, thinking you're, you know, smart, whatever. Actually, I think I'm smart.
Yeah.
I will say I think I'm smart, but that's where a lot of my problems lie.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a song about a pet peeve, but then implicating yourself as well and saying, listen, I'm not immune to this.
And then it talks about TM, which for the listeners who don't know is short for Transcendental Meditation. Where did that idea come from? What does it represent? Why end on that note?
Because, wait, you're not in LA, right?
No, but I do know people in LA.
Then you should be thoroughly familiar, because Transcendental Meditation is, and listen, I have to say, carve out a space to say, it does seem to really help people. And I actually, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area, which is an important piece of the puzzle. So I grew up surrounded by, you know, as a teenager been like, you know, hippies or earthy people or bohemians. But now I'm like, you know, actually have a newfound respect. It's like environmentalists, people who were interested in recycling and zero waste and things like that well before it became like more urgent, you know? But I've always had this kind of love-hate thing where like all my friends are super bohemian and super lovey-dovey. I don't like hugging that much, you know? But on the other hand, I do care about things like the environment or, you know, your spiritual, like being happy and the mind-body connection and things like that. So TM is like this sort of thing that it's like trendy spiritual, which I always kind of raises my eyebrow a little bit. And then in talking to people about it, you know, they're like, yeah, you get a mantra and you repeat it over and over. And I'm like, okay. And someone has to give you that mantra. And they're like, yeah. And then you pay them, like, I think it's like $1,200 or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's a sliding scale, but it gets up to over 1,000 pretty easy.
And listen, I know everyone has to pay their rent, everyone has to eat, but it's just like, I don't want my spiritual teachings to be something I'm paying for. I just feel like across the board, the conflation of religion or spirituality and like financial contribution is a little questionable.
I mean, the way you talk about it also, it makes me think of I feel like throughout your career, you've had a complicated relationship with like earnestness and taking yourself seriously. And I feel like this section especially, I don't know, kind of has it both. Like, you do take it, it's a song and you're trying to sing nice and it's like honest and genuine, but you also, like, it's like you can't just sit in it being a genuine moment.
Well, listen, you have grandma for that. Grandma's for that. But yeah, I just started feeling like I don't want to disappoint comedy fans. I want people to have something to laugh at. And, you know, me and Kojak laughed so much. We were just cracking up for like 8 months, you know, and so I want that to be reflected in the music. But mm-hmm. I definitely took some swings that were not jokey. So, you know, I'm sure that there'll be something for everyone to criticize.
With music, are you more comfortable being vulnerable than you are with comedy straight? You know, has your relationship to being vulnerable evolved? What does it mean to you at this point?
Well, kind of. I mean, I think music is more cool, not just for the vulnerability, but just that you don't have to explain everything. Like, you can get so much out of the actual musicality and the mood and the tone. Like, stand up, you can't just be vaguely in a mood and people are like, cool. I mean, I guess some people can, but I definitely know that even with stand up, when I got to a certain place with it, I was like, I don't want to be trying to act tough on stage. Like, that just isn't creatively fulfilling for me. And when I started out, I was surrounded by like New York guy comedians who are like, you just gotta get up 3 times a night, you just gotta this, you gotta kill it, you gotta crush. And I'm like, I don't think that this, we have the same value system. Like, I truly never even thought about crushing. Like, yeah. I was like, I just need to survive, you know, I just want people to like me, and I don't know. And so I know that I explicitly made it a point to be vulnerable in my stand-up too. But yeah, I mean, some of the songs are definitely, like I said, not jam-packed with jokes.
It's interesting because, especially in your stand-up, there's an idea of what vulnerable is to a lot of people in comedy, which is like confessional and like grossly honest or whatever. But it felt like for you, vulnerable meant, you know, not being so tough, but also like being way sillier. Can you talk about realizing that? How does your silliness and your honesty relate?
I realized that a lot of comedians that I was friends with would be silly and fun, and you talk to them, and then they'd get on stage like, okay, people, like, who this or that? No, you stupid dummy, you know, whatever. And I'm like, wait, what happened to this silly friend that I love? Like, it's almost like people have to put on some kind of armor to go dominate a crowd. And, yeah. And for me, like, I just, the words, the fact that you're saying the words vulnerable and silly is like, actually like, what if I start crying? But it's actually like, makes me feel so good, because that was like explicitly goals where I'm like, I don't want to be too scared to just be silly on stage.
Yeah. I asked this of David Wayne recently, which is, I'm curious for comedians. Well, I just don't want it to, I don't want listeners to be like, he already asked this question to somebody else. This is not for you. I know you wouldn't be impressed, but I am curious with comedians who can be silly, who can have a childlike innocence in their work, having what effect having a child has on how you viewed that part of your comedy?
Well, it's great training for being silly, because my kid loves, you know, being silly. I think also, though, it might be because he's like our kid, you know. Yeah. I don't know. But you know, I remember being pissed because these Brooklyn Nine-Nine fans were like, in some comments somewhere, were like, hopefully having a baby will make her softer or something. And I was like, fuck you. Like, what, you want me to get softened by motherhood? Eat shit. And they're probably like teenagers. Yeah. But then on the other hand, I do think being a parent changes you, you know, and I'm not quite sure how, though. I mean, I still hate people.
Yeah. Did it affect the what you felt like you should put out there, because how you viewed people in general? Like, you might have the opinion still, but it's what you decide to put out there might be different.
Yes, I do think that, but I think that was already happening as part of just getting older and being like, I don't want to hurt people. I don't want to make people feel bad. And, you know, now do I always stick to that? No. Sometimes I, my id takes over, my sharp rapiers. But I will say as a mom, like I started marveling, like everyone I see is someone's baby, someone's child, you know, like even looking at the audience and being like, oh my God, you guys were all babies. Like just like, oh, you were so much work, all of you, you know, and that was kind of a different way of seeing people. But yeah, like people talk about an inner child, but I think once you have a child, you're like, oh, there really is a child inside of everyone.
I'd love to play a clip for a few of the other tracks on the album, just so people can get a sense of the other things. So, Oat Milk.
I need oat milk. I want to drink my coffee with oat milk. Do you have it? Why don't you?
Well, tell me about how does it fit into the project? What do you like about the song? What was the idea behind it?
Well, obviously I just was really getting into oat milk. I had a couple of friends. Kate Berlant was a big proponent, Esther Pavitsky, a couple comedian friends that were raving about it. My favorite coffee shop, I went there and had some, and I just couldn't believe how much it tastes like whole milk. Now, since then, I've been told that there's like canola in it and stuff, and like there's the low fat version is better, but I've never seen it anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I've cooled off on it a little bit. I treat it more like a treat, but it's delicious. And then the day I recorded that, I had to redo a bunch of the vocals because it was actually really, really, really slow. But I had lost my voice. I had kind of been sick for like 2 months getting sicknesses from my toddler. Mm-hmm. And then I remembered this, like these little pills from my health food store that help your immune system, and it immediately stopped. But I went and recorded with Kojak, and I'm like, we should use the fact that my voice is like, you know, it was like, oh yeah, I can't do it now. But anyway, it was just super, like, it sounded so yearning. And so I put that into the song. I was like, I won't have this cool voice forever.
Chore.
Coffee ain't working anymore. I must be off for something. I need caffeine because life does not feel like a dream. You know exactly what I mean. No double shot, help me espresso. Ain't no fluid, feel like steam. Just a vapor of my former self, retired human.
Chore. I always was a big fan of Chica, and I loved her videos online, and she has that same vulnerability. She also clearly has a great sense of humor. And
so you're barely on this, like you do the hook, but she does most of the song.
Yeah, she's got the bulk of it. And then me and Kojak and Jerry were playing guitar, and actually this song, we initially were writing it for Anita Baker because Anita Baker is actually, she's become sort of our, I don't know what, fairy godmother, mm-hmm. mentor. She's like, there was a time where she was maybe going to be on the album. And then I think,
how did she find out about it?
Well, she followed me on Twitter and I followed her, and then she would tweet all the time about coffee. She's like, coffee cups up, and she's always posting pictures of coffee. I'm like, I knew I love this woman. And so the whole time we're making this coffee album and she keeps posting these things, and I'm like telling Kojak, and he's like, you have to ask her. I'm like, I'm not asking legendary multi-Grammy award winning, you know, songstress, mm-hmm. Anita Baker to be on this dumb coffee album. But eventually, of course, I did, and I DM'd her, and then we sent her, I mean, honestly, the absolute most embarrassing, like, what do you call it, musician's demo or something.
Demo, yeah.
Kojak was singing, and then I was singing, and it's just, we're trying to emulate, like, her insane voice that, like, it just sounded like dogs howling at the night sky.
Coffee ain't working anymore.
somehow we had the balls to send this to her. And then she was like, I'll come in. And she came to the studio and we recorded. Well, no, we didn't record. We played around with her and Money Mark was there. And we were like writing a song together. And it was like 4 hours. And then she was like, I'm exhausted. And she went home. And then she was like, I don't want to bog you guys down with my, I don't know, whatever. I think she just came to realize, like, what am I doing? I can't. Yeah. Come out of retirement for this nonsense. But she's remained on our team as a guide, and she's been so awesome and come out and hung out a bunch with us, and we eat sushi in Kojak's studio. And I went to go see her show at Staples, and I just was backstage with Anita Baker, and it was just me and her pre her Staples show. I'm like watching her try to defrost bone broth in a electric teapot, and I'm like, this is one for the memory books.
Two musicians hanging out,
yeah,
chopping it
up. Anyway, so then she obviously didn't want to do it, and right, you know, whatever, and so, but remains, you know, on the team in a spiritual way. And then we completely retooled it because it was made in the sound of Anita Baker, but we loved the concept. And then I was like, I have no idea if I'm about to get rejected again, but let me reach out to Chica because I think she's so cool. And then she was down to do it. She came and we totally did it in this very different way. And it became a song that to me feels like one of the songs that you would hear on the radio or something. Yeah. It's just, it's cool. But it weirdly touches on so many of the themes that I feel right now.
Soundproof?
You do not have a soundproof bathroom. You do not have a soundproof bathroom. That's what I need. Soundproof bathroom.
Soundproof was of this most recent batch of comedic inspiration where where we just went back towards comedy, you know?
Yeah.
It's just so, I mean, soundproof bathroom, there's no way to not know the joke.
Yeah.
But, and that one just kind of was one of those things. I felt like we put together like a flurry of songs in the 11th hour that we thought we already had all our songs, and Soundproof and Late were two of those.
How much were you working on this album? I feel like I know you talked, but was it like multiple times a week? How many songs total did you make up to whittle down? Like how?
First of all, it wasn't multiple. It wasn't like a couple times a week. We were every day from morning till night. And we were having lunch, coffee in the morning, then lunch, then like, you know, we would both, at the time when we started, Kojak's family was in town. Now they've like relocated. But so we would both go home and see our kids at night. And then we'd work early in the morning until late afternoon. And, but yeah, we were treating this almost like a full-time job. I mean, it just kept expanding and it kept feeling like, I've never felt this way before of like, first of all, this level of just, kismet with someone else, you know, where me and Kojak worked really well together, but also just this feeling of just following voices and just going deeper and deeper into something.
How many total songs do you think you did?
I mean, I don't know. We're still trying to whittle down how many would go on the album because we're, you know, it's a lot of songs. So
yeah.
I'm going to guess that low hundred, possibly. I don't know. Maybe 50 or 60 would be the conservative answer.
And yeah.
Yeah. But like, this is including like starts and stops on things. And yeah.
Dad?
I never really had a dad. It makes me kind of sad.
Yes.
What was the thinking behind that? How, that's another one where it's like, I can't tell how genuine or not genuine this thing is.
Well, for me, it's not about genuine or not genuine. That song, it's about things can be funny and be sad at the same time. And that's like something I've always loved, is something that is funny, but kind of hits you in the gut at the same time. And I think if like you had chaos or dysfunction in your childhood, like you're used to, or at least I feel like kind of calling out the elephant in the room or deflating the, you know, the energy with a joke somehow, and it becomes sort of a coping mechanism. Mm. And so for me, like, I mean, one album I really love that my brother turned me on to when he lived in New Orleans was Chris Isaak, Forever Blue. And to me, that album is so funny and it's so sad. I mean, it's a heartbreak album, and every single song is about heartbreak. But it's also like the lyrics are, look at all you happy people, you know, look at all the things you do. Mm-hmm. Look at all you happy people. I wish I could be like you. I mean, that's very funny, but he's singing it with his heart and soul. And I feel that way about a lot of country, a lot of R&B. I mean, a lot of sad songs are also funny. So yeah. It's fully genuine in that I think it's funny if your dad isn't around, and it's also fucking sad, you know?
You mentioned Chris Isaak. So on Spotify, it seems you created a playlist called Extremely Meaningful Music. It's 240 songs long. You describe it as, these are songs that are like poems, like museums, sage. Some are like Sundays. Some are like the cherry on top. Are they cool? Are they vital? I don't know, but they move me and have shaped me as a woman, as and a person and an influencer. What are the meaning of these songs? What, as if they are a vision board, what do they represent, these 240 songs?
Well, I can't synopsize the collection because they each mean something so different. But I think that I was trying to, in particular, find songs that I used to listen to over and over and over and over. So a lot of them are older songs, but, you know, for different reasons, you know, a song that you would be compelled to listen to, and then you listen to it again and again. So I was trying to include a lot of those songs. Now that could be something sad, like mm-hmm. an Amy Mann song or a Tracy Chapman song, or it could be something like an anthem, you know, like Love in an Elevator.
Were they all inspirations directly to the album, or are they sort of like, these are the songs that made me the musician that made this album?
Well, that for sure. And then I did try to include songs that kept coming up. Like, I want it to feel like this. I wanted to, you know, like Dad, I was channeling Nico. Mm-hmm. I felt like Dad was giving me that Velvet Underground vibe. Like, it's almost like singing with a slight accent.
We'll be right back with more Chelsea Peretti after this word from our sponsor.
There are a million bad ways to start your morning off. The no coffee traffic jam, the soggy morning jog, the why is the dog taking so long, just go already walk. But you can unleash your ideal day with a perfect shower using Method hair care products. Designed with high quality ingredients, Method's new range of shampoos and conditioners will give your hair undeniable softness and shine. And hey, if you're a night shower kind of person, that's great too. Try Pure Peace infused with peony, rose water, and quinoa protein. Or Simply Nourish, crafted with coconut, rice milk, and shea butter. Or Daily Zen, made with cucumber, seaweed, and green tea. Reconnect with the best version of yourself. Visit methodproducts.com to unleash your inner shower. Shop methodproducts.com.
And we're back with Chelsea Peretti. You've been talking about the album for a long time, and I think part of it is been working on it, but how is the sort of build up to it part of the album itself?
Well, I mean, I always just as a bystander think it's hilarious how promotion machines work, and not just musicians, but just everyone, like promoting things, especially like, I don't know, it's always like a little bit dirty and a little bit embarrassing to promote something, but I just think it's really funny. I feel like musicians almost get a pass too because it's so dramatic, like what they're doing. And like, it's such like an honor to be able to say my release date was pushed, mm-hmm. and you know, just all these these dramatic interfacing with fans, you know. But yeah, so I just love the whole pageantry of promoting an album.
And then this is the album that's it's going to be.
Yeah.
The short version of this question is why, but it's why do this? I think you talked about it, but I'm curious how creative people who hypothetically can do anything, but don't need time is really the limit. What was it that you're like, this is worth the time, regardless of like, I know you just sort of started it, but during it, what was like, this feels like this is the time I should be spending?
Well, first of all, like Brooklyn Nine-Nine or a show or movies, there's huge crews involved. It's a big, massive production. There's intermediaries on every level to your creative process. You get mic'd, you have a wardrobe person, you have a hair and makeup person. Like by the time you get to the creative work, you're so many layers kind of shifted from where you started, you know? And so it was very appealing to me in the same way that stand-up used to appeal to me, to not have so many middlemen and get to do something much more direct and concentrated. But also stand-up post having a child, but even before that, the idea that every single night you're supposed to be on stage, I just started feeling like it was a jealous boyfriend. Like, I don't want to right now. I want to just sit and have a nice dinner. I want to go on a walk or whatever. And so lifestyle wise, it just kind of worked out perfectly. Brooklyn Nine-Nine wasn't happening. And I didn't feel like driving all over town doing sets every night. And so this was something really, really creative that I could do from in the morning until afternoon and have this concentrated creative experience.
You had mentioned having a sort of love and hate relationship to stand up right now, or even you said, I've heard you say like throughout your entire career, you've had this sort of ambivalence, but you have a pure love for this. What were your frustrations with stand up beyond being a lifestyle, but like as a medium that made you feel sort of have a love-hate relationship to it, where this you can have a more purity too?
I mean, there's a number of things. One is what I said, which is that I feel like it's voracious of your entire life. Holidays, weekends, every single night I felt guilty if I wasn't on stage, and I didn't like that feeling of owing my life to something in that way. I'm also very moody, so I didn't like that I'm supposed to kind of be on stage dancing for people, tap dancing for people every night, regardless of how I'm feeling, you know? And I do think I'm increasingly introverted. But then also, you know, most lineups, even though there's so many successful female comedians right now, most lineups at clubs are mostly guys. And I always feel like, you know, the guys that are like, you got to get up every night, you know, telling me that. I'm like, would you feel that same way if it was 20 women and you every night? Would you be as psyched to go? And I, especially when I was younger, felt like I was going up after like 8 guys who were fucking hate women and were going on and on spewing all this shit. And then I have to go up and be like, hey, I'm the person that everyone hates. And I just felt like I had this chip on my shoulder. Like I have to prove to you that I'm worthy of being on stage because I'm a woman. And I don't know. And then the travel, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, a comedian, by the time they get to 10 years in or so, they have a persona that is sort of locked in. Did you feel like there were limits to what you can do on stage because you sort of established what your voice was there, where music, because it's a new area, you were able to sort of do whatever fits?
I guess so. But I still felt like I was like, here's what's my wheelhouse, you know? Yeah. Like I know, but I also, I don't know if I feel that locked in with stand-up. Like I always, when I was younger, would look at the older stand-ups that had a strong persona, like they're ranty or they do one-liners or they're, you know, and that's why I did like a more conversational style of stand-up where I felt like I can talk to you like I would to a friend about whatever, you know, I'm feeling.
You know, I watched the video of Oat Milk, which features Joel Kambooster and John Early just dancing their hearts out. And Joel told me that your note was like, this is 100% serious. This is not comedy dancing. But I was thinking about that. And as you mentioned, you started in New York with sort of like really tough type comedian. Literally their TV show that a lot of them were on was called Tough Crowd. That's how tough they were. But more recently, I feel like I see you hang out more with like the generation comedian that was right after you, the John Caperland, Patty Harrison. these are people who I feel like beyond they might have been influenced you at some point, but they feel like they have less rigid idea of what stand-ups need to be or what a comedian's career needs to be. Do you feel like you are being influenced by them?
Yes. I mean, yes, because they're really funny and brilliant and creative, and I'm always inspired by people that are. But I will say, just to throw out, when I started out in New York, there was also Invite Them Up, which was, you know, very inventive. People were doing all kinds of characters and sketches and weird things, conceptual things, Eugene Merman and Bobby Tisdale and, you know, all kinds of people. And there was also Eating It at Luna Lounge. So, you know, I wasn't just, you know, forced into this rigid, tough club scene. There was kind of this whole like weird, dumb riff that I always thought was stupid between the alt comics and the club comics. And I always related to both people, and I didn't want to be forced into one identity. But yeah, I think there's so many funny people right now that are doing really cool stuff.
I feel like having followed your career, there was always this split of beyond just sort of like whatever alt and club comedy is, but there were sort of mainstream comedic pursuits and like, I want to do projects just for myself pursuits. You know, why do you think that is with something like this? How do you hope people receive it? Like, who do you hope likes it? How do you hope they like it in terms of a thing?
The thing that was so great about this is I wasn't thinking of it from like a commercial standpoint. And I think that is what's like exhausting about Hollywood in particular. I think New York was better for that. At least, I don't know, maybe it's because I was younger and didn't have as much commercial opportunity, but like, it just felt so good to not worry about that stuff, like who it's going to appeal to. I mean, I think people who are, you know, fans of the various things that I've done, this will be right. You know, this will be awesome. And yeah. I also think because these songs have all gotten so stuck in my head and Kojak's head, and anyone who edited the music videos and anyone who worked on it, they're like, this song has been in my head. Like, I just think they are kind of earworms. So I feel like they're very catchy, and there'll be the kind of songs that people will want to create stuff to and like make videos. I don't know. I just think that when you're really inspired and it's not calculated, that good things come from that, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned this a little bit. How and when you left Brooklyn Nine-Nine, as you've talked about, is a bit the complicated of like whose decision, how much of whose decision, and we don't really need to get into that. But when you left to be like, I have this solo pursuit, were you hoping it'd be something like this? Is this like exactly how you imagine your life being?
Of course not. No, I don't know. But yes, on the other hand, yes. I mean, I also wrote a movie. I felt like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you know, we shot like 23, I think, or 20-something episodes a year. So really, you know, I just felt it took what I had creatively. I know some people are able to be on a network show and then go do sets every night and you know this, that. For me, it was like, that was my creative energy. And so when I was off the show, I was finally able to write a movie, which I've wanted to do for like 20 something years. And, and then make this album. So it's the silliest thing to undertake. But on the other hand, it has something that I take really, really seriously, which is creative fire, like true passion, like true excitement. And like I said, like listening to the creative voice in me and just following it and not worrying about if it looks good post Brooklyn Nine-Nine or if it will sell and what my numbers will be. Like just being like, I really think it's funny and I've worked really hard in comedy. So I hope that I have a good sense of what is, you know?
On one podcast, you said the thing you want to do before you die was make something you conceived of and saw through to the end that you feel extremely proud of. You're sort of talking about a movie, but then you sort of broadened it out. You know, I'm talking to you right before this comes out, but do you feel like this is an example of something that you did that?
Absolutely. Like, I truly have thought about, this is a very morbid time, and I've really thought about if I died, like, at least I made this album. Like, what a crazy thing to leave behind. And And, you know, and also my movie script, you know, I guess we could put that up online if I die. But yeah, I don't know. I just feel, I do. I mean, I know it seems so silly and dumb, but this is what I wanted to be my whole life, is like make something that I'm fully inspired and passionate and engaged in making. And to, yeah, see it through, from everything from merch to this dumb Spotify playlist to the music videos, you know, to my bio on Spotify.
Hopefully, you know, as this comes out, how does it inspire you as you go forward?
I mean, I'm sure in a million ways. Like, I could see this evolving into all kinds of things. I truly believe that when you follow, I mean, this sounds so cheesy, but I really, really believe when you follow your heart and you follow the spirit of true, like, creativity, it has untold, you reap untold offshoots from that.
Seemingly, it's hard to know exactly because it kept on being pushed, but possibly it was going to come out maybe a few weeks ago. But what does it mean for you for this album to come out when the country is under self-quarantine in this dark time? You know, why put it out here? What does it say about what you think about the value of comedy in a situation like this?
Well, you know, it's the kind of thing where, and I felt this at every step of the way, like, and I think Kojak did too, like, if this can't happen, then that's fine. Like, if we have to pull it because, you know, it's just been a horrible week for the US and it seems inappropriate, then fine, we will. Like, you know, I do believe, and I've believed since I was very little, in the idea of comedy giving people relief and giving people catharsis and saying for people what they were too scared to say or what was deemed impolite to say or whatever. But yeah, so, you know, I don't want to be too self-aggrandizing. I also just think on a simple level, like, people are sitting home and, like, they can't do much, and maybe this will give people something to do for a little bit. And, you know, maybe it won't be so cathartic for them, but it'll give them just a bit of entertainment or a song that they like.
When you picture it coming out, whatever time you have planned on dropping it, and then what is the feeling of reaction you're hoping for? Like, what do you, I just imagine doing a thing like this, which no one is expecting it to be this. I've looked at the Instagram comments of people signing up for a newsletter of this.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't know what this is, but whatever. So this is going to be what it is. What do you hope?
I hope that people get the songs stuck in their head, that they listen to them over and over, that they laugh, they get to have a smile, that they make a video or, you know, something, or they make GIFs. I do say GIF on purpose, instead of GIF, that they do that out of the music videos. You know, I think people are so creative that I don't know what they'll give back, but I just think that it's going to be an inside joke that we're going to get to share. And, like, even me and Kojak have, like, a whole vernacular now that we have of inside jokes about this weird coffee rabbit hole. And so it'll be fun to not be a lunatic off in a weird tunnel with Kojak, but be able to share those jokes with other people.
So that sound means it's time for our final segment, which is the laughing round. It's like a lightning round, but because it's comedy, it's a laughing round.
Cool sound.
Thanks. I couldn't tell if that giant pause was just you hating the name of the segment so much that you left. Is there a joke you wish, or sketch, or anything you should could steal? Not in, like, it's a different dimension, everything's exactly the same, but this joke from another comedian or this whatever is now part of your act, part of your oof.
You know what the weirdest first thing that came to mind when you asked that question was? This sketch on SNL called Tarmac Talk. And it was, I think it was Tim Meadows, and it was just like a talk show on a tarmac at an airport. And it was just very funny to me.
Do you remember any jokes you wrote that hypothetically got on air for Parks and Recreation?
God, you know, that's a good question. It's so weird because that room, we would get into the hottest, heaviest debates about so many ridiculous things like cake versus pie. And yet when you say that, like, I'm sure I fought for so many jokes, I can't remember a thing. I do know, like, for Kroll Show, I fought for Cake Train, like, over, just broke them down over weeks and weeks of pitching this Cake Train sketch. And finally they did it. And I think it was like their most expensive sketch.
Do you have a favorite joke or joke you remember from Brooklyn Nine-Nine you liked performing or saying?
God, you know, my brain isn't good for this kind of thing. I have to think. I mean, Gina had so many quotables. It's hard for me because then I just start thinking of memes or GIFs or things, but I'd have to like sift through scripts for a few days to get a true answer to you.
So is there anything you can say about the movie you wrote and hope to direct? And what?
Yes. Is that like this album, the idea of it and the vibe of it would be taking on serious thoughts and issues, but trying to make it genuinely funny in a way that you're really laughing. And, you know, comedies, I just have been like, comedies have been leaving much to be desired for me in recent years. And I really just want a comedy that really makes me laugh really hard. That's what I would try to do.
What song have you been listening to lately?
Well, We Will Rock You. Highly recommend.
Mm-hmm.
I've always loved the Amy Mann, Save Me. Tracy Chapman has been really hitting the spot right now. And I feel like just in general, like older music, like from the 60s, 70s, like I feel like the whole folky social consciousness, like songwriters is really hitting the spot right now.
What is the favorite thing you've cooked during the quarantine?
I've cooked so much stuff. I need to review my Instagram to really think. I mean, I loved those dumplings, even though I've been trying to make dumplings and like they're terrible looking and they're really failures, but I craved a dumpling so much and I couldn't find them anywhere. And I was like, I'm just going to fucking make them. I also made soba noodles. And so being able to make things outside of my wheelhouse has been exciting. Just in flavor profile,
yes.
But I clearly have a lot to learn.
Is there a joke that you've told a lot on stage that you kept on trying but has never worked that you eventually gave it up, or you haven't given up but it still has never worked, but you'll go to your grave being like, that was funny and everyone was wrong for not getting it?
There's a lot of jokes like that. And the thing that's cool about doing stand-up longer is you figure out ways to make them work. You know, you'd be like, I've tried to make this work for so long and I finally did. In fact, one that comes to mind is I was trying to do this bit about people who have their dogs off leash in flagrant violation of leash laws. But I think the reason it was never really working is because everyone fucking has their dogs off leash. So it's like the entire audience is like, well, we don't see a problem with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me, I'm like, come on, get on board. So I don't know, but I think I could do it. I just haven't figured it out yet.
You're observing everything and like, you're the only person on earth that thinks this is a problem.
Right. And I have to figure out how to implicate people, but make them feel like it's fun to be implicated.
Great. That's the end.
All right. Well, thank you. You're just so thorough. My God. And such a great way though.
That's it for another episode. You can stream Chelsea's EP wherever you listen to music. Follow Chelsea on Twitter at Chelsea Peretti and on Instagram at Chelsanity. Good One is produced by myself, Jelani Carter, and Art Chung. Editorial assistance from Amanda Gordon and Emily Sen. Gautam Srigishan did our theme song. Write a review and rate the show on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars, please. Email any comments, questions, or laughing round suggestions to goodonepodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at goodonepodcast. I'm Jesse David Fox, and you can follow me at Jesse David Fox. Good One is a production of Vulture and the Vox Media Podcast Network. We'll be back next week with Daniel Sloss. Have a good one.
Why do you run? Why does anyone?
I always thought that runners loved running, and that's not the case. Most runners hate running, but they choose to do it.
In the new docuseries, Running Sucks, brought to you by Team Milk, Abby Ayers learns why women runners everywhere are driven to go the distance.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
Team Milk is about fueling women's performance and helping them along their marathon journeys. You can sign up now for the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon taking place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16th, 2024. Learn more and register at everywomansmarathon.com.
Support for this show comes from Wix Studio. Designers and devs, you might be able to do your thing better on Wix Studio, a web platform with everything you need to deliver bespoke sites hyper-efficiently. Design teams get a ton of smart features that can take the grind out of web creation without it costing per-pixel control. Dev teams, you get a zero-setup, developer-first environment combined with an AI code assistant and your preferred IDE for rapid deployment. Search Wix Studio today to explore the full range of features.